My dad and my grandma gave me a phrase long ago, and I've always remembered it. If everyone threw their problems into the middle of the room, I guarantee you, you'd pick your own right back up.
Hello, and welcome to the Daily Helping with Dr. Richard Schuster. Food for the brain, knowledge from the experts, tools to win at life. I'm your host, Dr. Richard. Whoever you are, wherever you're from, and whatever you do, this is the show that is going to help you become the best version of yourself. Each episode, you will hear from some of the most amazing, talented, and successful people on the planet who followed their passions and strive to help others. Join our movement to get 1 million people each day to commit acts of kindness for others. Together, we're going to make the world a better place. Are you ready? Because it's time for your Daily Helping. Thanks for tuning into this episode of the Daily Helping Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Richard, and our guest today is awesome. His name is Justin High, and he is a serial entrepreneur, product designer, and innovator whose career spans health, wellness, biotechnology, and consumer products. He has co-founded multiple award-winning companies, and his work draws on IRB-approved clinical trials and published research in stress, sleep, and hormone regulation. His innovations have earned recognition from Forbes, InStyle, Time Innovation of the Year, International Design Awards, Oprah, New Beauty, Best in Biz, and NASA. Justin's interest in hormone health, especially the overlooked role of cortisol, began with a desire to understand how modern stress impacts the body, which led him to form his company, Rebalance Health. But we're here today, in addition to talking about that, because it's a really powerful story. I'm excited for him to share with us about his newest book, Stress Nation, best-selling title, which is available everywhere. This is the why behind his work, explaining what happens biologically and culturally as it relates to stress and how people can take control of their health in a chronically stressed, always on world. Justin High, welcome to the Daily Helping. It is awesome to have you with us today.
Thank you, Dr. Richard. Appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. I teased it a little bit in the intro, but I intentionally didn't read it because I want to hear it in your own words because it's powerful. So I know that your work was inspired by something significant that happened in your life, to your wife specifically. Share that with us, because I think that's foundational to everything we're going to talk about today.
It really wasn't the foundation to why I started the company, but it happened during the company. So my wife was diagnosed about a year and a half into the company with Cushing's, and that just basically fueled the fire to find a solution and to understand what is happening in the world today that would cause these types of symptoms to just get out of control.
And for those who are not familiar with Cushing's, to give us Cushing's 101.
Really simply, it's when your body makes too much cortisol all the time. And when cortisol is too high, it basically limits your ability to fall asleep and to stay asleep. And if any of you have had one night without sleep, or two nights, or three nights, beyond three nights, it becomes absolutely debilitating. And your body starts to shut down. And that's what was happening with her. She was getting very little sleep. She couldn't stop her brain. She couldn't turn things off. And her body was just going into just shutdown mode.
And then what transpired to your wife because of that? What were the consequences?
Well, your body doesn't make the hormones, right? So we talk about hormones a lot in today's world. Everyone's on HRT or looking at peptides and looking at different ways of, you know, augmenting their health for optimum performance, and who would blame them? But in a natural state, your body makes hormones, typically your estrogen, testosterone, progesterone, HGH, whilst you're sleeping, and very particularly in your deep sleep and your REM sleep. And if you aren't getting sleep, then your body isn't producing any hormones, and then you can't function. The best analogy would be, have you ever done an all-nighter or partied all day and then tried to function the next day? It's very challenging. It's very difficult. And that's because you haven't had a chance for your body to regenerate. You haven't had a chance for your body to restore itself and to reset itself so that you can be your very best the next day. And that's why sleep is so important. And cortisol is disrupting that natural pattern, which we call the circadian rhythm, in order for you to regenerate.
And I think cortisol is pretty well known. We see a lot in the media. People are always talking about cortisol. It's a stress hormone. But it is, and this is something that we've had forever, right? The, you know, these biological systems in our bodies that are creating hormones are not new. These are ancient systems. But talk to us about why cortisol is a bigger problem than it's ever been.
Cortisol has a bad rap, right? We know it as the fight or flight hormone or the stress hormone, right? But it's actually a very good hormone for us. So let's be cortisol's PR agent and flip the script a little bit, shall we? You know, cortisol is very good for giving you energy. It mobilizes fuel. It helps with your blood sugar levels and your glucose levels, right? It helps keep you safe. That's really what cortisol's job is. It's your body's alarm system. If you go back, you know, many decades ago, right? It kept itself safe from saber-toothed tigers. It keeps us safe from a bear, from a burning building. It's what tells you something isn't right. Wake up urgently and you're in like Superman mode. Then adrenaline kicks in and that's the hormone that gives you that boost of energy to be able to execute whatever you need to do to get to safety. And so cortisol is always on, but it's normally very nicely regulated naturally. I mean, it's high in the morning, goes up in the afternoon, starts to come down. And when you're ready for bed, it's at its lowest level because you don't want it to be there so you can fall asleep and stay asleep. And it is a good natural feature. Unfortunately, the media and, you know, influencers have demonized it, right? And misrepresented it in so many different ways. It's unfathomable to even think. Waking up slightly puffy became cortisol face. Well, that's not a real thing for the general public, but those that are suffering from serious diseases like Cushing's, it's a symptom. And it is a very serious symptom. When you look swollen and puffy and your face is got like a moonish shape and things are changing, and it's a good indicator for doctors to understand it. But you had too much sodium, you went to bed, and now it's cortisol face? That's wrong. It's not what it's about. And I think that's what's happened. The media has taken something that is a very good hormone, and anything in excess is not so good for you. And that's what's happening. Cortisol has been taken out of context. It's actually a fabulous hormone. And I call it the master hormone in an affectionate, you know, endearing way.
So, and thank you for reframing that, because every hormone that's in our body is designed to do good things. And you mentioned the saber-toothed tiger, the bear. That's really more what I was speaking of, is the fact that our brains are kind of acting because of the stimuli we're exposing ourselves to, as if there are saber-toothed tigers everywhere, all the time, round the clock. So you spoke to this a little bit when discussing your wife, right? That she was overloaded with cortisol and she couldn't sleep. So what are some of the other physiological things that people experience or psychological when their brain thinks they're saber-toothed tigers all about, and they just have way too much cortisol all the time?
Well, think of cortisol as a master hormone, as I alluded to. And when you're running from a burning builder and a saber-toothed tiger, your body shuts down different systems that it doesn't need, right? It's like the switchboard. It's saying this needs to function, this doesn't. And one of the things it starts to do is say, well, do we need libido? No, not a good time to be aroused. I'm running from a burning building. We don't need that function. We'll turn that off. What about metabolism? Well, I want to store as much energy as I possibly can, body fat, etc., because I don't know when I'm going to eat next. And so we'll turn metabolism off to some degree. Okay. So these features are beginning to turn on and off that our body uses on a day-to-day basis based on the environment and the alert state that we're in. So if we're constantly in a state of alert, no wonder Viagra has taken off and different medications. No wonder everyone's on GLP-1s and trying to lose weight because they can't seem to lose the weight. It's all part of this elevated stress cortisol cycle that we find ourselves in simply because of technology. And you've said just now, you know, it feels like our bodies are being chased by saber-toothed tigers all the time. And that's absolutely right, because our body is in constant alert, because even though an email, a text message, a news alert, what have you, comes at you as a vibration, a buzz, a ding of some sort, your body is reacting to that because you don't know whether it's good news or bad news. And most of the time, you know it's bad news, right? And the body's anticipating bad news. We don't anticipate good news. And so we're constantly in this elevated state. And so we really don't know the difference when that phone or that computer makes a noise of or vibration or anything like that, whether it is good news or bad news. And therefore, we're on this elevated, heightened state. And we don't know if it's bad news or just a calendar invite from Dr. Richard to be on his podcast. So we just don't know. Our body reacts exactly the same way. And that is driving our cortisol higher and higher and higher. And what's happened is we've rewired our brains to think that this is the new normal because we're saturated in it all day long. I'm not even talking about turning it on and being, you know, doom scrolling and being obsessed with screens and content. I'm just simply talking about what the device represents. And we're now such at a heightened state. People are picking up their phone just to see if I've missed anything. Even it hasn't made a noise or vibrated. We're constantly in this high alert state to see what's happening.
You and I, we kind of talked about this just a little bit before we hit the record button, is we have a shared interest in this. And one of the things that I often tell people, because in addition to everything you said, Justin, I think something that's adding fuel to this fire is social media platforms are designed to keep you engaged, to make sure that you're getting all your notifications and what are people doing. And the kind of the test I tell people is the next time you're having dinner, put your phone in your pocket. And do you feel that itch? Do you have to grab it? Like, are you going out of your mind because you can't focus without that thing in your hand or nearby? You're addicted to your phone. And while being addicted to the phone is something that you could say, well, you know, everybody's on their phone, you're putting this in a very different light because you're explaining that there are physiological consequences to having the saber-toothed tiger all around. Because you're right, when the phone buzzes, we don't know if it's a saber-toothed tiger or that thing that's arriving from Amazon that's 10 stops away that you've been excited about getting, you know, all week, right? So you've said some pretty provocative stuff to get us going that I think everybody can relate to. I'm curious, too, because you and I are old enough to remember a time where there wasn't cell phones. I'm wondering what the latest research is showing for younger people who have grown up with that one of those things in their hands since they were very little.
My book has a very strong nostalgic tone to it. So I reference back to life in the 70s and the 80s and early 90s with absolute glory and pride. We are the last generation to grow up pre-internet, right? Literally pre-internet. And, you know, I think when I was in college, I actually helped them set up their first computer labs, right? That was kind of my job in college, was learning about computers, because that's where they were coming out in mass. We were talking, you know, I think I had an email maybe the second year of college, not the first year, right? It was that early on. And so you think back to how life used to be when we were growing up, and, you know, I like to tell the same story over and over again, just simply because it hits home. You know, like, we used to go to the video store with my grandparents to get a movie for the weekend, right? And there may have been one or two copies of a VHS cassette behind the cover on the shelf. And if I was lucky, I get to take that home and watch it with my family. It would be one a weekend, maybe, if I'm lucky, two, right? If I wanted to listen to music, I went to the music store, right? And I looked for records or cassettes or, you know, CDs, right? We didn't have on demand at our fingertips. And so everything was slower. Everything was coming at us as an experience. I'm going to go and listen to the latest album this weekend, right? I'm going to go to the store. I'm going to see if I can watch the latest movie at the movie theater. And then I'd have to wait 6 months before it came out on VHS, maybe a little less, right? Everything was slower. There was a news channel, right? When we were, you know, out of college, but prior to that, there was a news hour, right? Ron Jeremy had a news hour. He didn't have a whole station that went on and on and on and on, right? There was a news alert that really was a news alert. It interrupted the program that you were watching to give you a really important piece of information. It wasn't 24/7. You waited for the newspaper. You didn't go online because it wasn't there, right? You wanted to research something. You went to the library, and at the library, you interacted with other people, right? You asked for support and how to find something, how to research something. Or if you had them, you go to Encyclopedia Britannica. The point I'm making is that everything was slower, substantially slower. And technology is a wonderful tool, but we were never taught how to use it responsibly as human beings. And therefore, it is an equivalent of a drug because we are now addicted to it. There's a reason why Zuckerberg is in court in California for this exact reason right now. He is in court saying, defending the argument that they have deliberately designed the platforms, whether it be Instagram, Facebook, you name it, to be addictive. And what consequences that is having on the entire population. When it comes to our youth, which was your question, how is that? I don't have the latest and greatest studies, so I'm not going to fabricate it, but I can only imagine it's not good. Simple as that. It's not good. The fact that the average person touches their phone over 2,600 times a day is disturbing, and that's the light users. The fact that we scroll the length of the Eiffel Tower every day on our phone is a horrible.
Hey guys, Dr. Richard here. For the past 7 years, I've been privileged to bring you incredible guests who are changing the world and can help you become the best version of yourself. I'm really excited to share with you a new quiz that I created based on my clinical training that will curate for you a custom list of my top episodes and actionable strategies to help you wherever you are on your journey. All you need to do is go to drrichardschuster.com to take it, and it's 100% free. You'll be taking the next step on the journey to unlocking the power of you, and I can't wait to see where you'll go.
Statistic.
I recall a research experiment, and I don't remember who did it or when it was, but they took toddlers and they handed them magazines, full-size magazines, and they're sitting there holding these magazines, Justin, and they're swiping the pages, and they don't understand why the pictures aren't changing because they're only used to holding iPads or Kindle Fires or the like. So without question, we do know this. We do know that attention span is shorter than it's ever been, which has all kinds of cognitive consequences and functional issues. But you said something really interesting. You said that we never learned how to use the technology properly.
As humans, yes, as humans.
As humans, yes. So, and I know your book, Stress Nation, is really, you wrote that to kind of help address this. So somebody's listening to this, I'm sure we've raised everybody's cortisol levels just a little bit with our conversation. Let's bring them down, Justin. What are some of the things that people listening to this can do to start taking control of their lives, which will reduce their stress and get those cortisol levels back to where they ought to be?
Look, I'm not anti-technology. I use it every day. I think it's amazing. The problem is that we are addicted to it. We just have to get that addiction under control. Again, going back to the 80s and 90s, I remember my parents would come home from work and they were unreachable. Once they left work, they had left work. The problem is we bring work with us everywhere because it's in our phone, right? And so we never really have endings to our days. And so beginning to put up some boundaries is something that we can certainly do. I had a great conversation last week with someone that says, the problem with text is people expect an immediate response. They're literally waiting for those three dots to pop up to see what's coming up next. They're waiting for a response. And so learning what you want to do to support your health is really, really good, important first step. So what are those boundaries? Am I going to use my phone purely at work? Obviously, if I'm a parent and I have young kids and they're out, I want to have my phone available to me. But I try to turn my phone off and put it away like 7 o'clock at night. I'm done. It's over. It's finished. It's out of my reach, out of my sight, not there. It's not in my bedroom. It's not next to my bed. I don't keep it there. It is off. Now, I am a parent and I do have kids. So on the weekend when they're out and they're about, it's kind of next to me because I want to make sure that my kids are safe. And if they need me, they can grab me. So I understand there's dynamics. So again, there's ebbs and flows about how you want to use it and how you want to play with it. But for me, and what I stress in the book and, you know, for the company is it's all about protecting your sleep. This is really the difference between how we use it and how we should be using it. It is disrupting our sleep. It is messing with our cortisol. So putting some boundaries around that and protecting sleep is really the mantra, right? So I want to know that if I'm going to go to bed at 10 o'clock at night, that I am done with technology and screens 2 to 3 hours before bed. I'm done with it. I want to bring my cortisol levels down. And obviously that starts way earlier in the day. But for also some purposes of talking right now, we want to be done with technology and screens at least 2 to 3 hours before bed. You don't want to be watching the news. You don't want to be watching any horror movies and things that may get you excited and bring your cortisol levels up, because again, that's going to disrupt your sleep. And what we're aiming for is 7 to 8 hours of uninterrupted sleep. That is the very best you can get for your body to get optimum recovery, regeneration, and hormone production so you can be your very best the next day. Right? So protecting those 2 to 3 hours before bed. Likewise, as we get older, it's not just technology, but it's lifestyle. We don't want to be having heavy meals, drinking lots of water, having sugar intake in those 2 to 3 hours as well. Because as you get older, your body is less efficient, not so good at utilizing what it has. And we certainly aren't as experienced in using the bathroom we were as we were in the 20s. We could hold our bladders, we could sleep through the night, no problem. As we get into our 40s, 50s, and 60s, we just can't hold our bladders the way we used to, and our bladders will wake us up to, you know, eliminate during the night, and that's not ideal. So you want to go to bed on an empty bladder. You want to make sure your brain is turned off, that you're able to, you know, just get into a relaxed state so you can fall asleep quickly and easily. And that leads a whole nother conversation around sleep hygiene and making sure the environment is at a cool temperature, that you're not sleeping in synthetic materials that are artificially making you hotter, which again will wake you up, that you're in a dark room, there's no stimuli coming in through windows, and, you know, again, as quiet as can be. All these different tips help support optimizing your sleep. Of course, you know, Rebalance Health, our products, our supplements help support that through the day and night. But it isn't a magic pill. And I think where we kind of fall short in today's world is we're impatient. We've lost our patience. We want instant satisfaction, gratification. And we'll take anything if it promises us instant results. And the reality is very few things do. And if they do, they're often too good to be true.
You said something that I absolutely loved. You said a lot of great stuff in there, but your phone is not even in the bedroom. It's turned off. It's elsewhere. So tell us why that strategy is such a good idea. I mean, you've laid out, you know, you don't want to stimulate your brain a couple hours before. But I think, you know, in this world where we're addicted to our phones, that's a deliberate strategy to move the phone to the other end of the house.
The very, very first chapter in the book is a little narrative about a very wealthy individual going up to the average Joe saying, I will give you $10 million if you put your phone right now in this safe deposit box for 1 year. You can't buy another one. You can't do anything like that. And instantly you realize how much of your world evolves around that phone. You can't tell anyone because you would have posted on the social media. You would have called your friends. You would have texted your buddies. Can't do that anymore. Now, call your buddy. Do you remember his cell phone number? No, you don't. It's in your phone, right? You take a picture. No, don't know. You're somewhere downtown. How'd you get home? I would look at my maps. Oh, I don't know where I am. And so your whole world completely collapses without the phone. And so we were a lot more in tune. We were much more street smart prior to the phone. And we are so reliant on that technology. So you have to break it. You have to break that addiction somehow. And starting off at night by simply having non-technology time is a very good way to start, because you realize how potentially anxious you might become, which is obviously not a great thing for sleep either. But again, you've got to start somewhere. So you start weaning yourself off of having to look at it all the time. One of the interesting things in the research that I did find is something called JOMO. So we all know about FOMO, which is the fear of missing out. But there's a kind of little movement happening in the youth today going, there's a joy in missing out. There's a joy in having that space, that private time, that time to just let things just naturally evolve in my environment without technology, without the noise of other people. Because let's face it, half the things, if not more, that you find on social media aren't even true, right? I mean, people only post what they want you to post, not really what's going on, right? You want real interactions with people. You sit down, you talk to them, and all of a sudden, kind of the walls come down and vulnerability comes out, authenticity comes out. That isn't always so easy to find on social media because it's not on brand. It's not what I want you to know about me. I have a particular representation that I want to keep up. And so it isn't always legit. And that is very interesting when you start to break that down. So actually interact with people around you, go for walks, meet your neighbors, your loved ones, your family, your pets, actually start getting connection, which naturally brings cortisol down, and realize how freeing it is not to be tethered to something. Because I don't know about you, but the spam and the solicitations are at an all-time high. And that doesn't help.
And they're only going to get worse.
And it's only going to get worse. And so disconnecting and actually getting back to your community and your world that you have around you is much better than this online facade that's out there. And again, I use it like everybody else, but one of the big things for me, the best tip that I think that helped me the most was I removed all social media from my phone. If I want to use social media, I go to my computer, which means I'm sitting down and I have a purpose. But doom scrolling, sitting there on your phone on social media, became a problem for me at one point. And so that was the quick and easy way for me to eliminate it.
You said so many things there that are really interesting and important. The JOMO is interesting, and I had recently read that 90s-style dumb flip phones are back, and it's the young people who are buying them, and they don't want smartphones anymore for exactly what you said. They felt overwhelmed, and it was too much, and if all you have is a phone that can't do anything but make phone calls, that's different, right? And more manageable. The other thing you mentioned, which I think is really important to point out, that leads to emotional distress is how people show up online. And, you know, research showed that this kind of came out of before there was social media and the early days of these massive online video games like World of Warcraft. We started seeing an idealized version of yourself. The name for this is the trophy case presentation, where you would present online this version of you that would be all of the things about you that are great and probably exaggerated by 2,000% and nothing bad. And then you go online and you're looking at your neighbor on social media and how perfect their life is and all the wonderful things they do. And you feel stressed and you feel depressed because your life isn't that good. I promise you, their lives probably aren't that good either.
My dad and my grandma gave me a phrase long ago, and I've always remembered it. If everyone threw their problems into the middle of the room, I guarantee you, you'd pick your own right back up.
I like that a lot. Before we wrap, we've talked kind of in general terms, and I do appreciate the 80s and 90s throwback for sure. But for those of us listening to this that have kids, you have kids, I have kids, it's one thing for us to say, you know, okay, well, we as parents, we're going to put our phones away and we're going to make improvements. If we go to our children and teens and tell them, hey, guess what? I listened to this podcast today and it told me that you can't have technology after X o'clock, and that's not going to be met well, right, with most teens and kids. So for parents, share with us some strategies, Justin, that actually work to where we could start addressing this.
I'm not going to lie to you. I have no idea. It's not something that I even would consider as being a subject that I would want to broach right now. It's an impossible task. I was lucky enough that my kids didn't have smartphones until they were literally the last 4 or 5 years. That was it. So I know I spoke to a gentleman last week and said, you know, kids are getting phones at like 5 and 6 and 7 years of age. And I mean, it wouldn't even be an option for me when I had kids of that age. And so I can tell you that what I did when they were teenagers and they did get smartphones was I used Screen Time by Apple, which I thought was a very good feature. And, you know, I basically enabled online features at certain parental ratings, because you can say, and if it's not a PG site, you can't look at it. If it's an R site, it's restricted, you can't look at that. If it's PG-18, you can't look at that. And so there's a lot of websites that have certain like ratings that Apple was able to restrict. Movies you could restrict, even music content you could restrict. I remember having an argument with my kid because I was 16 at the time. They wanted to listen to the explicit version of the song, and I had that blocked off on the phone, and they could only listen to the clean version of the song. And he's like, "Come on, be realistic," you know. And so, I use that quite well. I put time frames on it. You know, I basically became a brick at 11 o'clock at night for my kids. I was trying to be cool. I'm going to bed. I'm in bed by 9. You can stay up a little longer. I know you've got homework, but the schools aren't making it easy. And that's why I said I have no clue, because the schools require the kids to be online and be in front of their screen to do their homework, to read their books, to read the essays, to submit things. And so it's almost impossible to control it these days. And I think it comes down to something far, far more simple. Got to have a really good relationship with the kids. You got to be able to talk to them. You got to be able to communicate with them and explain what's going on and why you have concerns and have a real connection and communication. Just being militant over technology doesn't cut it. And I think that actually puts everyone's backs up and causes more anxiety and stress. But actually having a communication that is human and loving and caring could go a long way.
You know, I like that a lot. We had a rule. And when my oldest got a phone, it was very clear there would be no social media. Couldn't have social media.
Today, that's social suicide.
Well, my kid doesn't have social media on his phone. And he has actually said to me, "You know, Dad, I was really mad at you." I get that a lot. But I'm happier than the other kids, I think.
Yeah, you know, I would imagine that was amazing and good for you. Absolutely wonderful for you to put your foot down and stop that. You've done your kid a huge service. Not so easy for a lot of people.
No, it's not.
A lot of kids are now, you know, they track each other. They know where everyone is at the same time. It's really big brotherish now. It's out of control. Like, they know where their friends are, where they're traveling to, where their phone is at that very moment in time. They have endless amounts of dialogue through Snapchat and other platforms all the time. And that is how they communicate. And so, like I said, I don't know what advice I could possibly give in a world that is so difficult to regulate as a parent.
It is difficult, but I think the advice that you gave, that you have to have a real relationship with your kid, is the most important thing. I have loved our conversation today. I felt my cortisol levels going down the entire conversation. Justin, as you know, I wrap up every episode by asking my guests, what is their biggest helping, that one most important takeaway you'd like somebody to leave with after hearing the conversation today?
Well, obviously, I'd like them to look at our website and our products, but the real human response is, remember what it used to feel like when you were dating your partner and you would flirt and you'd have fun and you'd laugh? Do that tonight, because that's going to bring your cortisol crashing down. You guys are going to reconnect in a new fun way, and you're going to sleep like a baby.
Well said. The book is called Stress Nation: Escape the Technology Trap, Eliminate Stress, and Reclaim Rest. That's available everywhere, and we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. But Justin, you talked about some other stuff that you've got going on, your products and your company. If people want to learn more about you and investigate those things, where can they find that stuff?
Thank you. Yes. Rebalancehealth.com is the best place to look at all information regarding cortisol, stress, rebalancing your sleep, and so forth. Thank you for having me on your show, Dr. Richard. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I love what you're doing, and keep helping people get the sleep that they need, because it's so important. And to each and every one of you who took time out of your day, listen to this conversation, thank you as well. If you liked it, if you're inspired, if you're going to put your phone down a little bit today and turn it off tonight and get some real sleep, awesome. do that. And then the next morning, go give us a follow and a 5-star review in your podcast app of choice, because this is what helps other people find the show. But most importantly, go out there today and do something nice for somebody else, even if you don't know who they are, and post it in your feeds using the hashtag MyDailyHelping, but from a computer, not a phone. Because the happiest people are those that help others.